Hi, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to another delightful Love Letters Live. They're all delightful. I know I say that a lot. Today's guest happens to be a friend of mine who recently wrote a play on James Knox Polk. I went to a reading and really didn't know what to expect. And I was just blown away by it. It was so excellent. And I asked Bill to come talk about himself and this play, and we'll talk about it. And I know that there are love letters involved in this, people who should get them, because I know the family. So, Bill, I'm going to go to you.
Good.
Let's talk about yourself and what your background is in the theater world.
Well, I started out in Minneapolis. I had my own advertising agency for about 10 years. And it just so happened someone who had worked for me went to work at the Guthrie Theater.
In Minneapolis,
mm-hmm. Which is the biggest repertory theater at that time. This is in 1967 or so. And so they were in trouble, and she said, well, you ought to get this fellow that I work for, Bill Nurge, who's, you know, an SOB, but he was very good. And so they hired me.
By the way, in introducing you, I got so carried away with what you've done and who you are, I think I forgot to say your name.
Oh, I'm Bill Nurge.
Bill Nurge. Hello, everybody. Please meet Bill Nurge. Okay, go ahead.
And so I went to work at the Guthrie Theater, and I didn't really know a lot about theater. I didn't know what a Chavian character was or whatever. But I got thrown in with a bunch of fantastic people. Among them, you know, Tyrone Guthrie, Michael Moriarty, the actor
who you've never heard of.
He was just starting out at that time. Yeah. Adolf Caesar, who was a great actor, black actors and so on. And so I got to learn and how plays were made. I could sit in on rehearsals.
But what was your role in that? What did you do?
I was the head of public relations and marketing.
Yes, okay.
But I had my office across Loring mm-hmm. Park. And so that's how I got involved in the theater. I got to know what theater is. And like, for example, one of the first things I did was ask Tyrone Guthrie, how do you read a play? How does he read a play?
So what does that even mean? What were you wondering?
Well, because when, you know, you talk to people and they read plays, they don't understand how to read a play, and it's a little more involved, but he showed me exactly how he browses the play and goes to certain speeches and reads them to get a sense of whether the author, someone knows things. And so you learn how a play is written, how it should be performed, how it's rehearsed, and you're dealing with top-of-the-line actors all the way through. Mm-hmm. So you get to know the business. So from that, I then was running my business, and I decided either I'll stay in Minneapolis the rest of my life or I'll go somewhere else. And I came to San Francisco, and I happened to know a fellow, Jim McKenzie, who was running ACT. Mm-hmm. And they were getting in trouble. So he said, could you come out here and help us? I said, well, I have a business in Minneapolis. He said, could you come for 2 weeks? I said, I can come for 1 week a month. So I started doing that and coming out here.
And again, it was for PR for ACT?
Right, doing the marketing. And then I wound up, they said, well, we need somebody to raise the money. I said, well, I can raise the money. I've done mm-hmm. that political money in Minneapolis. I said, okay, so I also took over the theater, the foundation, and raised money in the city of San Francisco. So little by little, I kept coming 2 weeks and so on, and then I wound up out here. And then
so you were full time with ACT? Is that
well, more or less full time. Oh. I've never been full time. I've never had a job.
Right.
You were giving your consulting. Right. They pay me a fee, and I do whatever I have to do, and I don't have contracts or anything. Uh-huh. If I don't perform, they can fire me. I don't care. So from that, we started then presenting shows. We started presenting Hal Holbrook in his show, One Man Show.
Oh, I remember that one.
I presented James Whitmore in Will Rogers USA. And so the fellow who owned Will Rogers said, you know, I've never made any money with Will Rogers, and you seem to be able to make money with it. Could you go in partnership with me? So I said, okay. So I started SN Productions in L.A. with him, George Spoda.
Now, what did that mean, go in partnership? That you find the place to perform it and you...
Well, doing the producing end of the show.
Okay.
This was an already set show, but he had never been able to book it in the right places.
That's what I'm asking, yeah.
Make it work, deliver money. And so I took it on the road for 13 weeks with Jimmy Whitmore. We toured all over. We played, you know, the Midwest. We played the Music Center in L.A. We played Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C.
Oh.
And you know, the Grand Ole Opry and
mm-hmm.
all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing that on the road, you learn how to put up a show, turn, play one-nighters, play split weeks. You learn the business of show business. And while I was in L.A., we did other shows and so on like that. I did... Eleanor, I did the Eleanor starring Eileen Heckert.
By the way, I just saw The Bad Seed on television.
Oh,
Eileen
did?
Heckert in that was, but brilliant.
Oh, she was. Well,
she is,
passed away.
Yeah, I know.
Her real name actually is Eileen Yankee.
Is that right?
Yeah, and she, anyway, but that's a strange last name, but she's Eileen Hecker. I mean, she could get on the stage and just deliver.
Oh, she was amazing.
And
yes.
She could play Eleanor Roosevelt in that role. Mm-hmm. So little by little like that, that's how I got into the business. And one of the last shows I did, Jimmy McKenzie had problems with a show he was in rehearsal with in L.A., and I helped him get that together, and then we presented it here. It was The Boys of Autumn with Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, and I general managed that show. I got it up, mm-hmm. got it running, got it, and it sold out for 4 weeks. So little by little, then people knew about me, and I got invited to the Australian Council of Arts to go to Australia and do some seminars there on marketing and selling at the theater. And a funny story about that, was just before the Sydney Opera House opened. Mm-hmm. And so they had, I forget which architect this was, I think they had three or four before they finished it. He showed me around the house, and I walking over, and he said, "This is the box office." And they had this little room, and this is before computers. Mm-hmm. So you had to have hard tickets for all the shows.
Yeah.
They had four houses in there. I said, "Well, where are you going to put the tickets?" And he took out a little pad. He said, "What do you mean the tickets?" I said, "Well, you got four theaters. You got to have months of tickets. You got to rack all the tickets up." You know, he said, "How much space do I need?" He said, "You need, like that." So he's writing little notes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they were. They were just working from hand to mouth down mm-hmm. there. But I never did see the music center open. So that's my background, having toured all around the United States, been with major theaters, knowing all the front end of the business, the back end of the business. In other words, I know how to drag in a show. I know all the details.
So have you done that up to present day, or at some point you stopped that?
I stopped about 7-8 years ago and decided that I was going into other things. I mean, the theater business has changed quite a bit since I was in the business.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have a lot of connections. I know people all around the United States who are still in the business. And, one of the actors, Ken Ruta, who was a good friend of mine, who plays at ACT here.
Yes.
He came and did the reading
for
us.
Okay, so let's get to that. So we're just going to make a skip then to the play that you
okay.
wrote.
Right.
Because it was just amazing. It was interesting. Well, why don't you talk about it? We don't want to hear me talk about it.
Well,
I mean, what motivated you? I think the movie Abe Lincoln, the movie Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right.
Was such a hit, and for good reason. It was an important history lesson.
Right. Well,
and
in part, I have reservations about that movie, but let me talk about my play.
Well, I do too, but in terms of
the
theater
topic.
And topics, yeah. Yes, it is so, and who knew about James Knox Polk very much? Certainly not
well,
me.
This is the problem with American history. From the time of after the Revolution or the forming of the country to the Civil War, that whole era of our history
uh-huh.
is virtually unknown.
Certainly by me, it's unknown.
Almost everyone. I mean, it's not taught in schools. Nobody knows.
I know. I asked people, how much do you know about James Knox Polk?
How I got involved with this was I did my uncle, who was in the cavalry, 14th Cavalry, fighting Pancho Villa back in the 1910, 15, and so on like that. I got involved with that. I did a presentation about it. And I got to see about Mexican history. And then I would talk to people about who here, who are from Mexico. And I say this and this, and they say, "Well, I didn't know that." People didn't know anything
about
Mexicans.
So the Mexicans are feeling the same problem we are. They've got big chunks of their own history.
Well, Mexico's history is very convoluted. I mean,
you
have no idea. But in any case, I said, "Gosh, and my wife, who comes from the border, didn't know anything about Mexico's history."
Well,
and
her parents are Mexican.
Yeah, they're partly Mexican. And I said, "Well, gosh, and then I got into Polk, and I started reading about Polk, and then I hear Harry Truman says Polk was one of the greatest presidents in America.
So I learned from your play.
Right. And so all of a sudden, here no one knows about the Mexican War, because they always say, well, we went in there and defeated Mexico, and that was unfair, and blah, 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 in today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at history from the point of view of people of that time.
Sure.
And so I said, okay, so that's how I got involved in writing the play. And as I got into it, I got to see...
And you picked James Knox Polk because of...
Of the Mexican War.
That you had heard he was one of our greatest presidents because
that,
of what?
And also, well, now I'm into somebody else who was also one of the signers of the Constitution and all that. But Polk, I thought, was real good. And also because, and this was long before they did the Lincoln movie or we even heard
mm-hmm,
of the Lincoln
mm-hmm.
movie, I wanted to get... something in there about early Lincoln. It's very interesting that early Lincoln when he was a congressman, was known as Spotty Lincoln. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a good...
Well, now, this was an important part of your play.
Right. To show Lincoln as a young man learning from Polk, because many of the things that Polk did in firing generals and doing all this kind of thing is the same thing that Lincoln had to face when he did the Civil War. I mean, it seemed like that didn't happen, but it really, he could have learned from Polk. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure that Polk and Lincoln met, but there's no historical reference to any of this, okay? So a lot of this is very plausible historically, but I created this.
I see. Okay.
So I've read all these, the diaries of Polk and so on, but his diary is not like Adam's diary. It's Polk's diary is just, I had this meeting, I did this, I did that. It doesn't have a big elaboration like Adams. You know, if you read Henry Adams, Quincy Adams' mm-hmm. diary, it's more elaborate and tells you a lot about what he did and what his life was. So from that, I created this vision of what could have happened at that time. Another interesting thing about Polk is that he was married to a lady who was a 21st century lady.
That was very interesting part of
living in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And the reason was because Polk had an operation early on in his life, and supposedly he couldn't have children, and so his wife couldn't have children. And all the women who were in that time, wives, had like 5, 7, 9 mm-hmm. children. Mm-hmm. Their life was being a wife, raising the kids, and so on. They really couldn't have, even though they're educated, she was educated, one of the few women at that time who had a college education, or the equivalent mm-hmm. of a college mm-hmm. education. And so she was with him all through his political career, which was extensive, because he started out in Tennessee with the legislature, then he went to Congress. He was in Congress 14 terms. He became the Speaker of the House for 2 terms and so on.
He relied on her, I gather.
He ran for governor of Tennessee. He ran for president, and mm-hmm. she helped him on all the campaigns. And when he was in Congress, she would sit in the House and then debate with him and so on. And the members of the House thought so highly, they called her Members Polk.
Yes, I remember that from your play.
And they really gave her that kind of a connotation, because she was felt that important and knowledgeable. In fact, they would rather talk with her than her husband.
So that's participatory in a way that Hillary Clinton was.
Exactly.
And that you didn't... Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's 21st century people.
Right.
I mean, you know, so that was an interesting kind of situation. So now you mix that in with the Mexican War, with the acquisition of California and the Southwest, with the settling of the Oregon border issue, and some of the other things that he did. He tried to buy Cuba and all kinds of things that he did during his 4 years. He did it in just 4 years.
Oh, I want to talk about that, yes.
Yeah, so when you look at what he accomplished in 4 years...
But that gives the lie to people who say, well, you know, he's only been in office for 4 years and you can't really do anything in 4 years. And you hear that a lot.
Well,
today.
I understand, but that's the point of the play.
Right.
The point of the play is to present this information and let the audience, like you, mm-hmm. make that determination. Why is it that it takes 8 years or whatever it is?
Well, I always knew it didn't, because it only takes 20 minutes to louse things up.
Right.
How can it take?
But I mean, there's a lot of correlations in this play.
But I liked one of your lines that is still with me in the play, when you have him saying something to the effect that he wants to be president for just one term because he'll get more done under the pressure of having to do it in one term.
Right. But that was...
And not spend time worrying about running for a second.
But again, in that era of the presidency and also of office, one term was the way people did it. In other words, they said, you have one term and then someone else gets a chance.
Oh, and it wasn't a career thing.
Right.
Which shouldn't be.
That was the idea of rotation. They called it rotation. They wanted to rotate people because they were afraid that if you got in there too long, you would then take advantage of the position and so on and so forth for your
sure.
own benefit.
Well, and
that
don't
was
they
the fear.
Ever. Yeah.
And I mean, that was the fear of our forefathers. Right. They wanted people just to be in there for a short time.
Temporary.
And, right. Mm-hmm. So that was part of what the play is.
I do wish we could go back to that.
Huh?
I wish we could go back to that.
Maybe, you know, hopefully, if I can get this play produced and it can get an audience.
Yes. People will start thinking.
They will start thinking of it. Mm-hmm. And this is the real problem with America today. You know, everybody's on Facebook and all this and mm-hmm. talking in 24 characters.
Yes.
And no one has a chance to really learn anything. Okay? And, you know, David McCullough said that America is historically illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
And we are.
Yes.
Most people are. They don't. When we never really get a chance to hear about any of these things. And unfortunately, I thought that the Lincoln movie, you know, redid some things that everybody really knows about. We know about slavery. Mm-hmm. We know about the Civil War because that thing's been covered on infinitum. But we don't know about all of the people who started our country.
By the way, it has been covered ad infinitum. But probably, again, as you say, in the American school system, or in all fairness, you only have so much time to teach
right.
a subject that... There are probably, not probably, huge gaps.
Right. Well, yeah. I see if I
and
can...
And untruths.
What I could do with this also is to make some short PowerPoint presentations of this information and try to use it for school views.
Oh,
so the idea of this, once
idea.
I get this done, I'm going to take pieces of it and make it into a PowerPoint presentation.
Will you have the same actors do the reading? Oh, or you'll
have
actors.
No, I don't know which actors yet. Uh-huh. I don't know which actors yet. These are just friends of mine who... came to help.
Well, that
me.
Was wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed
that,
it.
That brought this whole world to life.
Yeah.
It was a small reading, just to say, because I hope the rest of the world gets to see it in larger readings or in a play that's actually produced. I hope you get to do that.
Well, I'm sure I will. I mean, that's my business. My business is producing,
yes.
not writing.
Right.
Although I enjoy writing.
Except that the writing is so good.
Well, thank you.
The dialogue, your sense of dialogue is fabulous.
Well, my advertising writing and all that is very similar to dialogue
I
writing.
I see, okay.
You know, I can't spread out like in a novel.
Right.
I'm more to the point and get
yes,
to the
yes.
point and so on.
Yeah.
And also, the dialogue of this play isn't written in the dialogue of 1800, because that dialogue, if you read plays of that time, they're much slower.
Oh, and stilted.
You know, when we did like Will Rogers USA, Will Rogers spoke in a long, quiet, the tempo was wrong for the ear today.
Oh, absolutely.
So you had to modify it a bit to fit the audience of today. And I've written it to fit the audience of today, although I've had to be very careful and not use words that didn't exist in 1840.
Right.
You know, but most of the words did exist. It's amazing to me if you look at the vocabulary of 1840. It's quite elaborate. I mean, almost all the words that you find were already in existence, but only a few people used them.
Uh-huh.
In other words, most of the people who were educated, who came from England and so on, spoke the King's English.
Mm-hmm.
They spoke of Shakespeare. In fact, even Lincoln learned to speak Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I brought out in the play that they didn't do in the movie is that Lincoln read the Bible every day.
Mm-hmm.
He carried a Bible with him. Now, that's not politically correct in today's society to say a guy has a Bible and is quoting from the Bible. But he did. If you read his spotty things that he put on spot resolutions, they're all Bible things. You know, God will bow you down and all of that. That's
really?
the way he wrote, if you read them. You know, and I mean, hardly any of that was in the movie. You know, that wasn't in the movie.
Right.
Because it's not kind of right.
Definitely wouldn't sell today for other reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's who he was. Not for religious purposes, but that was the only book available for him to learn when he was growing up.
Right. And there are ways of expressing. There are ways of expressing that become popular.
Right.
Right.
So some of these things I think are important for people to try to see a snapshot mm-hmm. of what 1848 was. And what a president was at that time.
But I'm so glad you said that in language that we can understand, that's familiar to us.
Right.
And you can't, yes.
Yeah. So that's what I've been trying to do on the play, you know, and make it so that it will play.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's a lot of, I've just given you a lot of stuff, and which we call exposition.
Yes.
Exposition does not work on the stage.
Right.
So you have to have it in a way that people will... It will go across the lights.
Sure, there's that whole show don't tell philosophy.
Right.
Yes.
People have to say it's believable and I like the people doing
yes.
it
yes.
and I'm involved in it. But it just can't be I said this and he said that and blah, blah, blah. You know, it can't be exposition.
That's a wonderful idea. That hadn't occurred to me. I'm so glad you said it about doing presentations and going into the schools and making presentations.
Yeah. I mean,
that's fabulous because I remember the first good history lesson I ever got. with no disrespect to my social studies teachers. And that was, there was a television movie on Winston Churchill years ago. And it was wonderful. It was probably the first time I really learned something.
Well, most of the regional theaters and theaters here have what they call school performances and so forth. And they produce school materials. Mm-hmm. And I did that when I was at the Guthrie Theater. Uh-huh. And I also did it at ACT. And in fact, an interesting story, at the Guthrie Theater, we produced these materials for like Harper's Ferry.
Okay,
well, Harper's Ferry, you know, was a play about John Brown and the battle they had at Harper's Ferry. And a curious thing about that battle and so on, Robert E. Lee was the captain, the officer, who did kill, led the group that fought and murdered John Brown and so on, or captain. So anyway, we did the materials, and the man who wrote this for me was who was assigned to work under me at the Guthrie Theater, was a fellow by the name of John Law. Now, John Law, and he wrote some material, and I said to John, I said, this is not good, John. This is, you know, this is Minneapolis. So I blue-penciled his work. He got all excited, and he went to the managing director, and he said, well, you know, he was John Law. He was just beginning.
Law, the movie critic?
The movie critic. He has since become a great movie critic.
Oh, he's fabulous,
and
a
theater critic. He lives in London. And so I said, God, if I ever do this play and he's my critic, I'll have to say, John, I'm sorry I blue-penciled your stuff, you know, because
it
wasn't exactly right. But anyway, so we would do that, and then we would have audiences come and we'd produce this material for the teachers and all that. And I can see that happening with this play also, where I could produce some material. And I have some connections with the school, both at the University of California here. So that's what I'm going to do with this play whether or not I get it finally produced or not, I'll do that also.
I hope you do.
Okay.
And so I'm just curious because I'm so eager for this play to be out there.
I am too.
I want tickets. But you know enough people in ACT. But what about just more readings of it? Like public readings, is that appealing to you at all? It sure is.
It's not really appealing to me. I'm a producer, and I just did the reading for me because I knew it had to be cut. And I knew, because I know how many words I want to do and so on. And I had to tighten it up. But I wanted to hear it before I cut it. I knew what to be cut, but I had to listen to it and hear how I was going to do it. And then I saw how I was going to move this over there and move that over here.
Okay.
And like that. So now I'm in the process of almost finished with that. And now I'll just go ahead and try to get a stage reading maybe.
That's what I meant, a stage reading. I didn't mean a small one.
Yeah, I understand. Uh-huh. I might do that. It depends on where I go with it and how I can get it done. Yeah.
Well, this is wonderful, folks. And go ahead. I see you've got something printed.
I thought we were going to do a love letter.
Oh, thank you for taking my part here. I appreciate that.
I thought you said we have to do a love letter. I'm ready to do it.
That's great. I am going to say that in about 2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes. And, okay.
But no, now is even better.
Okay.
So you are a producer. That's great.
Sorry.
I like that. And you do get to the point. Okay, so that my next line is, since I'm about love letters here.
Yes.
Well, who would get your love letter?
I don't exactly write love letters, but I write letters that have... over the years have been very interesting because the people write me back. My wife always said, how come they always write you back? Like, you know, for example, I've written letters to William Safire, who was with New York Times. He would write me a letter back. I write letters to Paul Solman, who's on NPR and so on. He writes me back.
By the way, I've had the same experience, and that is such a good lesson here. People love getting letters of appreciation.
But my letters are about what they're doing or something they've written and so on and so forth.
But you've taken the time.
It's enough there for him to say it's worth writing back.
Yes.
Okay. And so a letter should be that. And it takes time to write letters like
that.
Thank you. Yeah, you just can't, you know, say, well, thank you very much. And it's yours truly. You know, you have to really say something. Well, anyway, let me tell you this story.
I'm going to fire myself and let you do this.
Okay. Anyway, I'll tell you this story. I belong to an Italian group of men who meet every week. There's 200 of us, about 50 meet each week. And we sit around a U-shaped table. And you get to meet guys of my age, you know, a certain age that we are.
Okay.
Anyway, and I always sat on one side of the room, which one of the legs of the U, and this other fellow, Roy, sat on the other side. But we got to be friends and so on, and he liked what I would say or do at the meetings and like that, or my speeches or whatever. And so we got to know each other. So he invited me and several other people and said, he was part owner of a restaurant in Marin. He says, I'm going to have to give a lunch, so come on to this lunch. So I went to the lunch. It was very interesting. And I wrote him a thank you letter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, another great form of love notes.
Yeah, I wrote him a thank you letter. And then, nothing came about. But a couple of months later, He was driving on Highway 1, and he got killed in an auto accident.
Oh, my.
Yeah, just terrible. Anyway, a couple of days after that, the family called me and said, are you Bill Nurge who wrote him this letter? I said, yes. He said, would it be all right if we read the letter at his testimonial,
yes,
at the church? I said, well, it's perfectly okay. Yeah, go ahead and read it. So I went to the church. There was about 200 people there at the church. And they read the letter and said, Bill Nurge wrote this letter, and da-da-da-da. Then I went to the reception afterwards, and they had the table, you know, with the pictures out. And there was my letter framed in the
oh.
Okay? So this is the letter. Now, it's just a few sentences, but here's what it was. Okay, and his name was Roy. So I said, Roy, dear buddy, first, thanks for including me, a regular other side of the room sitter, to share a privileged event with you. The friendship permeating your luncheon proves we are more than our bodies. Even the barriers of our personal, social, and public lives are no sanctuary from the unfettered camaraderie of Italians with wine. Most of all, your consistent, quiet elegance commands a man-to-man respect that is truly profound. With appreciation, Bill. So that's the letter I wrote.
Oh, okay. So I'm just close to tears for so many reasons. That is so perfect as a love letter. That
I
is
know.
So perfect.
Well, it's a man. It's a man letter. But
it's a and right. that and isn't that a wonderful point? Yes,
yeah.
It's a man letter, and it's just filled with friendship and love right from the beginning. Because you start right out, you know, a good love letter is about the other guy.
Right.
Yes.
And so are testimonials at funerals.
But you started right. First of all, you say the day after, which is important because people want to know when you're old and gray. And you look back at something, when was this felt? When did somebody feel this?
Right.
But you start right off saying, Roy, dear buddy, which already almost had me in tears. It's definitely just man love, man-to-man appreciation. First, thanks. I mean, the friendship permeating your luncheon, we're more than body, but more than our bodies, which is particularly gripping, seeing as he was, yes,
yeah,
killed. And thank you so much for reading this. My goodness, and it does bring up another point that you said, you know, you didn't hear back, and a love letter is a gift. We don't give a gift for what we're going to get in return.
Well, no, this was written long before he passed away.
No, I understand that, but you said that you hadn't heard until after he died. People always eventually hear,
I
believe.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, no, but I saw Roy, you know, afterwards and that. And
right.
But we never men have a different kind of communication than
right.
women do.
Yes.
You know, my wife always points that out. That, you know, it's
all wives point that out.
Yeah,
yes.
we're on a different wavelength.
Right.
It's like we know that we don't talk about certain things.
Okay, but you're touching on something really important. Now, just in terms of, I'm going to say this because we're almost out of time, but this would be, in your own handwriting, of course, it's your typewriter, it's not computer.
Right.
So that has a certain charm already by this time. But in your own handwriting, everything that you write, all your written things in your handwriting have a special power also.
Well, they do on mine because it's hard to read my handwriting.
maybe so, but you know, people say my handwriting isn't good enough if it's at all legible. But historically, sometimes people, not sometimes, often, letters are found 50 years later.
Exactly.
And the headlines are always in his own handwriting.
Yes.
So if you ever feel like making a copy of something in your own handwriting,
yeah,
I say do it.
Oh, I got you.
Okay.
Yeah. Put it in your room.
Thank you so much for doing this. This was just great. And I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, and I hope as you know, things go on and in your playwriting career, when you have other things to share, you'll do it here.
I definitely will.
Thank you. This is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. And please remember that if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And P.S., so is finding one years later. So until next time, bye.